But my pleasure to introduce Dr. Richard Dickinson as our presenter. He's actively retired, some of you may well know, a pastor at Transfiguration. He has served with distinction in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for years. He was director of the Black Ministry Commission for how many years? 14 years, and recently retired from that position. And his topic this morning, Minority Ministry in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Would you please welcome Dr. Dickinson?
I don't usually get started with apologies, but I was informed by the person that I trust very well, I did trust, that I was to be here at 10:45. And so I tried to get here 5 minutes ahead of time and everything, but well, I'm here. And I'm very happy to be with you. I wish that I could make this speech talk about this topic at a time when I was just brimming over with optimism and could see a great rosy future for the church I love so well. I don't know if any of you have read the book I wrote. It's been about 15 years ago that I wrote that book. And at that time, I was kind of brimming over with that optimism. Although there had been a lot of dark years, I think I ended that book with that good old hymn, "My Church, My Church, My Dear Old Church," and I still love my church. But when we talk about its role in minority ministry, it leaves so much to be desired that it's kind of hard for us to really be optimistic unless we can see some major changes taking place that's going to enable us to be a very strong church in that field. What I've tried to say so much to our church, if there's any church body in this nation that ought to know how to do minority ministry, it ought to be the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Because we did minority ministry, whether we want to call it that or not. When we came to this country, we decided that we were going to minister basically to the Germans. And they were a minority in this country and still are. But we tailored our ministry to the needs of those people. In fact, copied the culture and background of those people so much so that when I was trying to do some research for the history of our work in black ministry, if I had not had a fairly good command of the German language, I would not have been able to do that research adequately. Because the very minutes of synodical conference that was the primary board that handled minority ministry for synodical conference, to which Missouri Synod contributed all those years, were written in German until about 1930. So, frankly, we learned well how to do minority ministry as long as it was ministry to the Germans. And I basically used the old adage, "As you would that men should do unto you, do ye even so to them." And if I want to minister to Hispanics, why do I want to make Germans out of them? Why can't I make Hispanics out of them, what they are, and learn to work with them where they are and as they are? That's what other churches are doing that are successful. Why don't we do it that way? Before I came to the synodical building, I worked as an executive in the Northern Illinois District. And we had a lot of Hispanics in Chicago. And when we got ready to, as a district, to decide that we were going to do ministry to the Hispanics more than any other in those areas, we want to make a special effort in that field. We had a real laughing situation. How are we going to do it? So we were going to go and send a couple of good pastors to Cuernavaca, Mexico, so that they could learn the Spanish language. And then they were going to come back, and they were going to be the primary people to work with the Hispanics. Sounds about like us. Because we would feel that the Hispanics didn't know enough German to be able to do a good job in establishing the ministry. Because when I went through, I could understand having to learn Latin, which they said was the language of the church, and having to learn Greek, which was the language of the New Testament, and having to learn Hebrew. But then having to go and learn the German, because that was the language of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, was, in my opinion, just too much language. When was I ever going to get down to that which was important? And when you finish with all of that study of all of this, then you get down to the important stuff like the sociology of religion that enables you to know how to deal with all of these different sects and all of these other things that matter in people's lives. You've used up your seminary years, and you don't get that until you get out into the ministry. It takes you 10 years to learn it. That, I think, is our major problem as church. I love my church. I don't think that there is any church on earth that is closer to the teachings of Jesus than is the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. But you know, the devil is good at wherever something is great, he's there. And he's working harder there than anywhere else. And he wants us to know, yeah, you got the kernel of truth, but then you got to surround it with so much mess that after a while, the truth gets lost. And other things get to be so important. You know, when I went to the Synodical Building 15 years ago, we were in the middle of the Synodical strife. And, you know, and the Seminex was over on the hill. And we had all of this stuff going on here. And I was in black ministry, and I couldn't hold one meeting in St. Louis. I'd had to have two. Because if I had a meeting at a church that whose pastor was a conservative, the liberals wouldn't come. And if I had one at the church of a pastor who was a liberal, the conservatives wouldn't come. And all of that infighting going on, and I was so happy when I thought it was all over. And now I wonder if it will ever be over. I remember being with Synodical Conference, and I met, I think, in Milwaukee back in 1960 at a convention that was a shame. We couldn't even adjoin the convention. The argument was so strong between Missouri and Wisconsin. Yeah, I know y'all would understand what I'm saying. But we could not adjoin the convention. We didn't. The only way we could get out of Milwaukee was to recess the convention. Anybody got up and made a motion to adjoin, nobody would second it. Because we were arguing over things like prayer fellowship and the Boy Scouts and the chaplaincies and all those kind of things that we were arguing over, and we just couldn't quit arguing. Now, why am I saying all of this? I'm going to say to you, just like I said to my church when I got to Transfiguration, with all these arguings, but nobody wants to join a church that's full of argument. They don't want to be involved in all of this contention with everybody at each other's throats. Do you understand why Missouri Synod becomes a declining church? And it's going to be in decline until you get rid of all this fussing and arguing at each other's throats. How can you talk on the gospel of forgiveness when we won't do it ourselves? You've got to learn how to be brethren and work together as brethren and create a climate within the church that other people want to be a part of. And I don't see it happening right now. When we came up with this, in our situation with this committee on structure, you know, I thought it would be a committee on structure that would do that once and for all and we'd be through with it. But now every convention that you come to, the committee on structure has to make a report that's got to be changed in the structure. And you didn't set it up so that you elect officers every other convention. We got to elect officers every convention and board members every convention. And so instead of ever getting down to the job that the Lord wants the church to do, we've got to go to the convention in Pittsburgh now to argue over structure. We've got to go to Pittsburgh to talk about election of officers and board members and all these other things. By the time you finish with all of that, half of your convention time is done. And not only that, you have created a climate of animosity among the people that they're not going to do anything constructive anyway. You understand why I'm saying I'm quite pessimistic right now. Now, if you get around to minority ministry in our church, when I came aboard 15 years ago, we were going to recruit and train 150 black pastors and get them placed in our church because we needed every last one of them. 273 congregations in black ministry with about 45 or 50 active black pastors. And we've been in the ministry now for blacks for about 115 years. And that's what our record is. To me, it's a dismal failure. And I'm wondering when they're going to recognize that, because people don't do anything until they find out that they are a failure. When you come to that realization, then you say, now what do we do to be saved? You understand what I'm trying to say? But as long as you refuse to admit the fact that that's not the case, then you're not ready to come to grips with the issue. You're dealing with a population explosion around the world, and the amount of workers we are putting out into the field is not even a dribble compared to the need. And we come together talking about how can we put more people into the ministry, and most of the folks think that we are talking only about how can we get more people through the seminary. I wish we did have a seminary that could put enough people out here into this work to make the difference so far as the population of the world is concerned. But we can't. And we need to get to first recognize that and talk about the tremendous resources that God has put in these churches that we have got already. They're lay people, it's true. But my word is, if you keep a person in this seminary for 3 years and he's got 1 year out for his practical work, and half of the time they've been out 5 or 10 years in the ministry, if they can't train people to do the work, when will they ever learn to do it? With all the lay people we got, we don't have a sensible lay ministry program to enable these people to become actively and aggressively involved in the expansion of the church. Now, I'm sure if the early church had followed the patterns that we follow today in our work, you would have never turned the world upside down, because we would not have gotten the laborers out there to do the job. That's why I'm saying I'm a little bit upset about it. And it's not extremely difficult if we want to sit down and come to grips with the problems. It's no longer business as usual. I'll throw this thought out at you. I was studying population trends till the year 2020. And it shocked me when I looked at what nations were going to be the top nations in the world by the year 2020. Nobody will ever be able to catch China. They will always be number one. Anytime you got over a billion and going on and on and on, that's out of the question. And India comes in pretty close behind that. Now, they had the Soviet Union in there, but you don't have the Soviet Union anymore, so let's forget that as coming in number three. Right now, the United States sits at about number five or number six. But by the year 2020, really battling the United States will be Brazil and, of all things, Nigeria, West Africa. Would you believe that Nigeria, West Africa will probably have a larger population than the United States by the year 2020? Now, that should say something to us, because we say that the people coming through the seminary today will hit the peak of their ministry anywhere from 15 to 20 years from now. You'll have all kind of experience, and you'll be really ready to go at it about 15 to 20 years from now. What will the world look like at that time? And that's the way it's going to look. Are we ready to deal with that in terms of ministry? That's going to be the big issue. Now, I'll throw one more thing at you. And I don't want to use all the time. We put on a radio broadcast at our church every week. And that's what I was doing. That's what I'd use it every minute that I could at the house and to get here just in time. But anyway, our elders ordered some tapes. I asked them for some tapes, and it's seldom that they give me more than I asked for, but this time, I don't know who did the ordering, but I wanted to get about 100 tapes so that we could get involved in sending tapes out to our sick and shut-ins and all of those things of our worship service. And they got really aggressive about it. When the order came in, there were 300 tapes. But above all, along with it was a book on tape ministry. And all of the things involved in it, whatever you needed to get into tape ministry. But the most valuable thing to me about it was that book on tape ministry, written by a person who had been so involved in tape ministry in Laos and Cambodia, in those areas there of what used to be French Indochina. And I was looking at how profitable it was. They had learned that if they took a native from any little village in there and get him to put on tape and take these little tape players and carry it back into those villages, those little tapes could draw more people around the word than any of them could ever do. It became almost like a miraculous method of reaching places that you couldn't have reached because you didn't know the language. And as I read that book, I thought about in Nigeria, West Africa, we had one of our missionaries. He's a great man. He spent about 15 years in one village, learned the language of the people, translated the entire Bible, Old and New Testament, into the language of that little village. But then after he did that, he had reduced their language to an alphabet and writing and all of that, but nobody in the village could read. So then he had to go and teach literacy classes so that the people could read. And just as soon as he finished all of that, we pulled him out and made him a professor at the seminary. Wouldn't it have been so much better if we had thought about the fact that there are 394 separate languages and dialects in Nigeria? Why can't we pull some people out of there, because English is the general language anyway, from all those different villages, and let the natives put the gospel in their own tongue on some tape and take it back in there? It would have happened overnight rather than 20 years. You have to think about how many people have been born and died while you are messing around. Now, somehow or other, I see our church body with all of this great doctrine, this plan of salvation, like the Lord Jesus himself gave it to us. And in our methodology for getting that word out, it's like fiddling while Rome burns. Because the little effect that we are having is clouded and messed up because of all of the infighting that's always going. We have to wait till we get the infighting out of the way, and then we can get down to the work. By that time, too many people have passed on into eternity. I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but I don't know if I can sound too pessimistic. Because when I look at the shambles of supply of black workers in black workers in black ministry, you remember what I'm saying now. I'm not saying that they're the only ones can do it, but conditions change in the culture, folks. When I was a kid, black or white workers had very little trouble in relating to black people, young or old. But in the 60s, it changed. They relate well to older blacks. But young blacks, it's extremely difficult. Which says to us that we got to take it seriously and get more blacks out there if we're going to reach the newer generation, because someone said to me that you walk into a church and you look at the Sunday school, and it tells you what that church is going to look like 25 or 30 years from now. And that's the reason why I went to work so hard at Transfiguration, because when I walked in there and looked, my wife was a Sunday school teacher, and she brought along my grandson, and had not been for him, we wouldn't have had a Sunday school. And I said, this is the way it's going to look 20 some odd years from now. We have got to go to work. And so we have done that, and we are going to rebuild our Sunday school. And I would say this time next year we'll have 150 kids in that Sunday school or more. But you have to deliberately decide that you're going to do that and come up with programs that will accomplish that. But when I look at what has happened in black ministry over the last 15 years since I went to work there, it's been, just like it is in black ministry, a decline in membership, not a growth. Now, when you're always in decline, it should say that you need to make some changes. What those changes are, I can't say. But I do say we need to get together and study the situation and come up with some way to turn that around. And I say it's possible. When I look and see other churches are growing, why can't we? We went to work with that at Transfiguration. And here's my field worker here, and he can tell you, we did get it turned around. I know when I first went there, we used to have about 40 people. If we got 40 people in church on Sunday morning, we were doing good. And believe it or not, we got 35 in the choir right now. And our attendance usually runs about 150 on Sunday and growing. And we anticipate another 3 or 4 years from now to have it full. But it's because we didn't do it Lutheran style, all right? We really didn't. I'll be frank about it. I'd been Lutheran past a long time, and I tried that out, and it works for those people you got, but it doesn't reach that many that you don't have. And the strange thing was, our services had been running anywhere from 50 to 60 minutes long. Now our services run anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours long. Not making it shorter, but making it more interesting, involving more of the people. You know, our choir sing two special numbers every Sunday. If I ever get my youth choir, they'll do the same thing. We'll probably increase it even more. But it's involving the folks. As I used to say to, when I used to preach a lot of installation sermons to pastors, if you want to keep the church off of your back and keep them from worrying you all the time and talking about you and all kind of fussing and contention going on, work your people to death. Don't give them a chance. It works. That's the way it is. The more people work, the more that church means to them, and the faster your church is going to grow. But if you're going to be sitting down arguing over peripheral people, you're not going to make it. And I see it happening too much in our church body, and I guess that's why I'm too pessimistic about it. I don't see any joy on my way to Pittsburgh because, you know, I'm seeing too much arguing going on out there over little junk. And I know that that's building up to be the key item in the Pittsburgh Convention. And is that going to be worth a dime in terms of church growth? My answer is it's going to kill it. It worries me. I'm going to stop here. Any questions anybody want to ask?
I just keep going.
Department of the Statistics, Research and Statistics. From my experience, how do I feel? What you mean? My feeling is that we are concentrating on the wrong thing. For the last, I would say, 20-some-odd years or more. In the 50s and early 60s, we were involved in so much polemics between the Wisconsin Senate and the Missouri Senate, and I thought that when the Wisconsin Senate and the Missouri Senate decided to go their separate ways, now we're going to settle down and really get back to the issues of church growth, what makes a church grow. Instead, we turned internally, and those people that were supporting the Wisconsin Senate started fighting those that didn't support the Wisconsin Senate, and the fight turned inside, and Missouri Senate tore itself apart, and you had to split the team up in the 70s, all of that big argumentation going on. And then after that was over, then I thought it would settle down again, and you have a group saying that, well, we haven't purged the Senate enough. We've got to clear out so many others. And so that was a big argument that went on during the Proish years and has been going on during the Bowman years and still is a big issue that's on the horizon today. And I just don't think that we're going to grow as a church. See, if it was doctrinal stuff, I would go along with it. But I came to the conclusion that it was nothing but politics. And I abhor and hate politics with a passion. And especially when people are going to use doctrine as issues to solve political problems. When in the final analysis, it was not the doctrine that was important at all. It was who's going to get this office and who's going to get that office. And my opinion is, until we can finally get over that, and come back together again and look at the mission of the church, we're not going to grow. And I was saying that to my congregation when I first went down to the same thing that applies to a congregation, in my opinion, applies to a church body. When I first went to Transfiguration, my word was, if you got any arguments, folks, don't bring them out here. We're just not going to have them here at this church because people come out here to worship the Lord. They want to celebrate how good God has been to them, and they want to sing his praises, meet each other, and go home feeling good, feeling that their burdens have been lifted. And so I had to work hard to break that up. It was there. It still is some undercurrents of it. But sometimes you just got to put your foot down and say, this is not the place for it to happen. Go to such and such a committee if you want to argue about so and so and so. Go to such and such a person if you want to fuss about so and so and so. But we're not going to have all of that tension and stuff going on here when we come together to celebrate and worship the Lord. Now, you won't find that at our convention. I don't know. I haven't missed a convention since Denver. And every one of our conventions, New Orleans was ridiculous. And then we went to Anaheim, California, and right in the middle of all the arguments, we would stop to pray. And then after the prayer was over, the things would join right back together again, and there was the vote, and the other group would get all whipped to pieces, and that was where the walkout was. I hope you understand what I'm getting at. I don't know what you do.
Yes. Yes.
I wanted to ask you a question of things that I was just talking about concerning the big style versus substance debate that's going on in our church, that if you don't worship like a Lutheran, well, then you're not working out.
Right. And that style.
Is it possible to change the style without affecting the substance? Can that be done? The substance meaning our doctrine?
It's done all the time. It's done all the time. I never saw the Lord give a whole lot of inspiration to the melody of a song and the meter of a song and how you sing the song. We are talking about the words, aren't we? Do they really hold true to the doctrine that the Lord has given us in His Word? I don't have to sing it the way it's laid out in the Lutheran hymnal. I can sing it another way. The same thing is true with my worship liturgy. I don't have to follow page 5 or 15. I can follow it and alter it and change it in all kinds of ways if it fits my need. At Transfiguration, we follow page 15 as a rule. But when I need to make a change in there, I don't feel any qualms whatsoever about doing it. So I agree with you. It's more style than anything else, but when you... I used to make this statement, it's more sociological, but I don't know what's good for me to say that, because I once said to the people that what this church needed more than anything else was someone that would sit down and write down the difference between doctrine and culture, because that's where our biggest problem is. We get the doctrine and the culture so confused. But I also said, and I still believe, that if one of our good theologians would do that, he'd get ready to join another church, because we put him out.
Yeah. It was interesting what you said about white pastors related to the younger generation of blacks coming up. I was wondering if you could expand on that. What was behind that? What's the reason behind that from your experience? Why is that a big issue?
In the 40s, 50s, and early 60s, racial integration was a pretty big thing in the black community. And they were pushing for it, and they thought it was a great thing. But in the 60s, there was a complete reversal, that you had to have a positive image of yourself, whether you were black, white, or purple. And the issue was, I'm black, God created me this way, and therefore I should be proud of it. God didn't make a mistake. He knew what He was doing. So the pursuit of racial integration ended just about at that point. And whether we want to accept it or not, the segregation that was legally enforced in this country for ages established a separate culture for blacks and whites. It's a different culture. Now, the unfortunate thing is, for me, I know white culture very well, because I've been in black and white culture practically all my life. But the average white person does not know black culture, because he hasn't been in it. And what I used to say to them when they would say, you know, white, black folks are not ready for integration, I'd say, no, because white folks are not ready for it. Because the issue is not the black folks, it's really the white folks, in terms of, because they don't understand black culture. But blacks do understand white culture, because they have to relate between them all the time. Now, the average young black has seen so much now of white culture that he does not like, that he really isn't trying to be like white folks anymore. He's saying, you will have to like me as I am. And that puts our young white pastors at cultures, they don't know black culture. And when they do try to learn it, they usually overdo the thing. And the worst thing in the world is to overdo it. It kind of turns people off. I remember one of our guys was going to put out a film strip, and he was putting it out for black ministry. And the black that he was depicting in the film strip is absolutely not the black that's going to ever come to a Lutheran church more than once. So because of the fact that he just did not know, he was in a ballpark that he didn't understand. So that is the major problem, all blacks are saying, I want someone that I can identify with. I can never be white, but I want to see a black person in these positions so that I can have the feeling that I can aspire to be just that. And that's what you're fighting right now.
Okay, that we have a hard rate percentage of white church.
I didn't quite get that.
Where are we going to get the black pastors from?
Oh. I tell you, when I leave here, we're supposed to go and try to put together a resolution that's going to go to our convocation to talk about that issue. In 1960 or 61, we closed the black seminary we had in Greensboro in the interest of sending all of our people to the existing, at that time, Springfield and St. Louis seminaries. We had been told that our seminary out there was inferior, and so we're going to close it, and all of our guys will go to Springfield and Greensboro, and St. Louis, and that's what happened. But we discovered that once our guys got here, there were some ingredients that had a little to do with more things than Greek and Hebrew and German. It had to do with culture. And you pull a person out of the black community and keep him out for 4 years in college and 4 years in the seminary. He's been out 8 years. And then suddenly you're going to send him right back in, and it takes him 5 years to get acclimated again. And we're saying we got a problem with all of this. And we would like to see if we can get our school in Selma more involved in preparing black people for lay ministry and also the first and maybe even the second year in seminary. So that when we pull our guys out, they'll only be out of the community maybe 1 year for that third year in seminary. They probably come to one of these schools for the third year in the seminary and do their vicarage under the supervision of one of our existing seminaries. But this idea of pulling them out for 8 full years and then send them back in again has proven to us that it's counterproductive. I know they said that to me in Africa. One of the reasons why they didn't want to send too many of their people to America was once they got over here and stayed over here for about 4 or 5 years, when they got back in Africa, it took them sometimes a decade to reacclimate themselves to and adjust to their former surroundings, and it's a problem. We have that same problem here, but probably not as bad as they have. And that's a part of the recruitment problem. That's not even a half of it, but that's a part of it.
I know that in with Hispanic missions, and I'm speaking a little bit from ignorance here, I know that they have programs where the people in Central America will do this study in the countries and in the cultures, and they have a type of seminary program for those men in those countries. Is that something that's considered, or is an option that people are looking at for possibly for black history as well? Or is it because that is in the United States that they were encouraging?
That's what we will be looking at today. The big problem with us is that we felt that because blacks were in America, there was no separate culture. They were all in an American type of culture. I think in recent years it has proven that there's no such thing as a real American culture. We are just a nation of many, many cultures. And if you're going to be effective, you got to learn the culture in which you will be working and operate within that culture. And black folks definitely have their culture. And it's getting more Americanized as a black culture, but when I was younger, we had two major cultures. One was a northern black culture, and the other was a southern black culture, but the two of those have just about merged. Now, it's not that much difference between them, but there is a vast difference between the average situation in white culture and that in black culture, and that's what we're talking about.
What are some of the ways that a pastor can equip himself to deal with the black culture and to incorporate that into his predominantly white character?
Well, you can study it quite a bit to get yourself ready for an immersion experience, and then go in and work in black work for about 3 years and make your decision about whether you can make it there. But you're not going to learn it all in book. And that can kind of prepare you for what goes on, but you have to get in there yourself. And you have to know, though, that once you get in, it's just like me when I go in white community in the United States of America. If you go in a black community, and you're a white person, you can stay in there 50 years, and you're still going to be white. You cannot become black because you're not black. And you just have to go to people and be, I am who I am, and that's the way the Lord did me. I'm Christian, and you can work with me in that context, and that's the best way I can go. People will accept you that way. But if you go in there trying to be like them and trying to deny your own culture and all that other kind of thing just to be like them, it turns them off.
With the number of new congregations, black congregations being planted, and with the present number of congregations, candidates at the two seminaries will be filling how many pulpits? What are the projections? And you mentioned in the WMI meeting a week ago or so that sometimes our seminarians are sometimes surprised with calls into black congregations, not realizing all along of the numbers of congregations that the Missouri Synod has.
When I was working with this about 5 years ago, we calculated that every year about 10 strong white congregations that declined became black. So black ministry was growing in terms of congregations just from that source at the rate of about 10 new congregations a year. We have been planting since about 1988 or 89 at the rate of about 4 or 5 new black congregations a year. In fact, 1 year we planted about 12 new ones. So without any tremendous increase in the number of black pastors going through, it means that more white pastors are going to somehow or other be placed in black ministry. Yeah, whether you want to or not, that's going to be the avenue that's going to be more open. Now my word to the seminary, and not to the person who is going into it, but to the seminary, is that when you are going to place people in black ministry, please have a long consultation with that person before you do it. Then number two, be sure to have some kind of experience prepared to help that person when he goes into this work so that he doesn't bomb out in less time than 1 year. Black Lutherans are not hard for white pastors to work with. It's not the you can get into a black church and stay there for all your ministry and enjoy it. The biggest problem is going to be outreach to the non-Lutheran community. How do you relate to the non-Lutheran community? And we need to help our young fellows in that area.
Given that the Missouri Synod has long history and the school education, parochial schools, and the many old churches in inner cities that are changing or
historically, and if I would just look at it historically, I would say to you a strong yes that the school is the best source that we have for outreach. However, our schools are not as mission-minded as they used to be. We've got a much greater potential all over this nation if we could get our teachers to understand that they are ministers, assistants to the pastor, the staff of the congregation for outreach. But we have done such a great job of copying the state system that when I go in here and teach my 5 days a week and go home and grade papers and write lesson plans, I don't even need to be out to Sunday school on Sunday morning. Our major problem is the fact that we are not getting that kind of dedication to church growth from the teachers that we used to have. Black ministry grew because of the fact that the teachers, and we didn't give them the credit we should have given them, the teachers were the ones that built those churches in Alabama, in North Carolina, in South Carolina, and places like that. They taught all through the week, and then they visited all of the parents and recruited for baptism and recruited for confirmation, and the pastor came in and taught some confirmation and baptized all the children and confirmed the folks and got credit for it all. Now, that's what happened. Now, the teachers don't do that anymore, and you've got a school on your hand that is a heavy burden financially, and is not producing the fruits of what we call baptism and confirmation and what we really see as church growth. It's a great potential, but my word is that right now it's not doing that. And most of the time we in these places we have a school that's practically all black with a staff that's 100% white. And half of the time the staff never even comes to church. And you can't build congregations that way. Question here.
Is there any kind of a realistic chance that we could use a site like Transfiguration or one of the Luther Plan churches as a site for institutional work so that while we're here at the seminary that those of us who want to become exposed to the black community?
Here's one right here that's working with me every Sunday. And we have all kinds of programs that go on out there, and all you got to do is come in and say we'd like to tag in here for some learning experiences for our people. We've got a social ministry program, we've got a employment program, we've got a youth program, we've got a fantastic music program, choir program, all of that. Any of those things that you want to tie into to learn. And pretty soon we're going to have an aggressive evangelism program. That's our next big move. And if you want to be a part of that, we'd be glad to use your services.
Thank you very much.
You said a lot of things we don't like to hear, but we need to hear, and we're right on.